Hello and welcome to The Weekender. We are going to take you on a journey of what has been going on in gaming this week. I'm Warren from On Tabletop, and this morning I'm joined by Ben on the screen, Jerry with the most amazing pen beard ever, my mate Justin.
Hello.
I have to set my sarcasm phaser to stun this week, Justin. apparently, last week it was on kill.
I think disintegrate would be the proper setting you had on.
You ended up looking despondent, man, like that whole sad puppy thing. So relax, dude. This week the sarcasm meter is going to be turned on.
Read the room.
Read the room.
Turn. But he looks at me then, and I'm just going.
I know this is the problem.
Yeah, you're
I
a
have.
Bad influence. Yeah,
you know, I've been checking and bouncing off him, and I'm giving them the. Is this okay, Jerry? And Jerry gives me the. You need to do it harder, Lauren. And then, of course, we are joined by Brother Lloyd.
Did you really just say read the room?
Yes,
that's that kettle calling the pot black if ever I've seen.
Oh, I know I'm terrible.
Careful.
For it.
You got to set your sarcasm on stun, Lloyd. Yeah, it's him. So okay, Justin, kid gloves this week, man. Kid gloves. We're going to look after you. You're going to show people nothing but
hey,
happy
Warren,
smiley
Warren,
faces.
You just setting back one more notch, please.
Jackass.
Right. They say it's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll. And in this industry, it is basically rock and roll, and it's a hell of a long way to the top. But to find out just who's at the top, it's that time of year again. Uh-huh. It's awards season.
Ta-da!
Yes, the 2020 Gaming Awards, as voted for by you dudes, has now launched. We are in the nominations phase, so let me explain to you how On Tabletop and previously Beasts of War Awards work. What we do is we open up a survey for nominations, okay? You can reach out to there's 16 categories, I believe, this year. You can reach out to your favorite companies and stuff like that to let them know that this is on, okay? Reach out to your buddies. And you go and you fill it in, okay? Here's who I think should be in the nominations, okay? We then close those nominations. The nomination phase will close on the 31st of January. Okay, so you have until the end of the month to get your nominations in. We then troll through those nominations to come up with finalists for each category. Okay, and then we open up the voting phase. Okay, so at some point in February, the voting stage will go live, and you can go in and you can then vote for the finalists. We then close the voting phase. And then we get on with producing an award show.
There is one thing I would like to note for the survey.
Yes.
It's something that I came up against whenever I dropped in to fill it out myself, was there were one or two of the segments where I just didn't know who the hell to put in there.
So you can leave them blank.
Exactly. So just if you don't know what to do, you can leave it blank.
Yep.
But try and fill them all in, because it really helps.
Yeah. Well, the reason we try to cast the whole nominations phase as wide as possible, so please do share the link and get it out there among folk, is to try and get the surprising nominations, the stuff that you don't always see, okay? So we want it out there as wide as possible. And remember, the more someone is nominated, the easier it is for us to spot that nomination as we troll through the data to make sure that we can get them into a finalist's position. Mm-hmm. So, you get to see all the usual suspects sometimes, but the nomination phase is key. It's a great way for us all as a community to find those hidden gems, those ones that aren't necessarily there with all the big budgets and stuff like that. So please, guys, help us spread the nominations phase far and wide, okay? So nominations phase, crucially important, finishes at the end of this month. Then we open up the voting. After we've processed the entries, come up with the finalists, we open up the voting. The voting's done the same way. You can go through, you'll see pictures, and you'll be able to vote. And again, if you can't pick a winner of a particular category, you can skip that and move on to the next one. And then after the voting is completed as I said, we get to work on producing the awards show. Right, some important stuff for you to notice, to know. By nominating and by voting, you get entered into our Mystery Box prize. The Mystery Box is huge. So basically, over the year, we collate lots of cool things like board games, minis, products, all kinds of stuff. And it all goes into a giant box, and somebody can walk off with that Mystery Box. And it's great for you to take back to your club and to your friends, and you can divvy stuff out.
Could even be a boat.
A boat's a boat, but the Mystery Box could be anything. It could even be a boat!
So if you want to win a mega prize, this is the thing to get involved in. Okay, so by putting your nomination in, you can drop your email address in there. We'll pick an email at random, reach out to you and say, yeah, you've won it. And it's a combination of, by doing the nominations, you get an entry. If you do the voting, you get another entry. It's a big old thing, and we make the announcement in the show on the night. The other thing is, we have awards!
Ooh.
Yay! Check this out. So this is the 2020 On Tabletop Gaming Awards. So this is the prototype.
Sweet.
So
this is 1.0.
The winners, okay, so the companies and the individuals that win in the categories are going to get this beautiful bad boy, handcrafted and handmade in here by the On Tabletop team. Isn't it lovely?
Yeah. Also, we really need somebody to nominate Battle Grip data cards for the best wargaming accessory.
We can just send this one out.
That's what you didn't win.
So once the show is complete, or possibly even before the show, I don't know. Nope. At some point, they will wing their way out of the On Tabletop Towers and head off to their respective well-deserved winners. Mm. Let me quickly run over the categories, and I mean very quickly because there is 16 of them. So if you can quickly bring it up.
Yeah,
okay?
I've got it right here.
So we have the best miniatures game or expansion. Doesn't matter whether it's a full game or expansion. We want to know what's the best thing around minis last year. So it's from the 1st of January 2019 to the 31st of December 2019. So it just covers exactly last year. Same thing for board games, same thing for card games, same thing for RPGs. We also want to know what you thought was the best piece of gaming artwork that was released last year. The best sculpt that you thought that came out last year. The best paint job. This is always a good one because it pulls in from all of those big competitions, and what we get to see who we thought was the absolute best paint job of the entire year. So it's not only the competitions, but also some of the product shots that companies put out. The best terrain product. What did you think was the best piece of scenery or terrain from the year? And the best hobby or gaming accessory. So that's anything that isn't like a piece of terrain. The best is new categories. Best 3D printable model. Okay, it's that's a big thing for us now. So we want to know, what did you think was the best 3D printable model that was released by the industry last year? We want to know, who do you think was the best newcomer of 2019? What small company or big company or whatever burst onto the scene and made themselves known? Best Kickstarter. This is a doozy. So this one is not about Kickstarter fulfillment. Kickstarter fulfillment would fall under best miniatures game or best board game. Or
best newcomer.
Mm-hmm. Or best newcomer. This is about, what do you think was the best run Kickstarter from the point to funding, okay? In terms of its communication, its entertainment, its commitment, its ability to draw cash out of your pocket. So what was your best Kickstarter of 2019? We then are also digging deep within our community. We want to know who the On Tabletop community hobby hero was of 2019. If someone within the community made a difference to you, we want to know who they are and why. Because we're going to be reaching out to give an award to a hobby hero within the community of On Tabletop.
Which of Andy's ex-paint jobs was it that inspired you?
Yes. Best content creator. This goes out to all of our brethren on the YouTubes, the Twitches, and the blogs. If you have content creators, not us obviously, but content creators that you would like to nominate so that you know, because of the great stuff that they have produced in 2019. All we ask is that they regularly produced something during 2019. Get it in there in the nominations, and it could be a great way for us to find just some awesome content creators. Best on tabletop community project. As you know, we have the project system front and center within the on tabletop community on the platform. Loads of people use it for updating their projects and making us aware of the steps involved in their projects. We learn a ton. We laugh a lot. We want to know which was your favorite project of 2019. And then finally, not last or least, well, it is last, but it's not least, best local store or club. We want to reach out and get the FLGSs out there some recognition, okay? We want to know, where were you nominate? Where did you think was just that cut above, that place that just deserves the recognition? We need you to tell us who they are, how we can contact them, and why you think they should be nominated as the best local store or club. We're going to then tell their story during the voting stage so that everybody can learn about these places, and then we will announce the winner on the award show night. Nice breadth of awards this year. I'm really, really looking forward to it. And for anybody that has helped share it so far, thank you. If you're a small company or whatever, please feel free to share it with your communities. Energize them up to get the nominations and stuff in there. The more nominations you get, just it purely makes it easier for us to spot the trend in the data. That's purely it. Once it gets to the voting stage, then everybody gets to see what you do and what you're nominated for. And people then make a judgment based on what they actually see. And that's why the nominations phase is crucially important for us to discover the hidden gems, to discover interesting things that maybe are a bit out of the norm or new. Okay, so I can't stress enough, you know, even if you only have one thing that you wish to nominate, click through to that form, not put it in there. You don't have to fill it all out, but fill out the parts that you feel are important.
Sweet, right.
Sweet to the beat. Okay, right, time to get on with the show. Ben. Mm-hmm. We have some updated Necromunda releases.
Yeah, so anyone who saw a couple of weeks ago now, maybe a couple of months ago now, there was the Dark Uprising set that included the couple of new gangs to throw into the mix in Necromunda. So you had the Palamite Enforcers and the Corpse Grinder Cults. Well, they and pretty much everything from that set is now going to be available separately. So if you want to start your own force of Palamite Enforcers or Corpse Grinder Cult members, then you can start taking them to the tabletop in two separate sets. I really like the look of the Palamite Enforcers. I think they look absolutely amazing. Now I've seen the paint schemes for them a little bit further up close. I think it looks really, really cool. The Corpse Grinders are also up there on the list. I do quite like the look of them too. I'm not too fond of the guys who've got like the bare chests and the weird cages, which I've been told is to stop them eating all of the meat that goes through their hands and stuff. But I think they look very cool as well. On top of the two gangs as well, they've also got a set of terrain in the mix as well. So if you like the stuff that they've been doing for Necromunda with, you know, the verticality that they've been doing in all their plastic terrain and that kind of thing, they've also added in a bit more stuff here with the Zone Mortalis set. So you can mix and match things, add height, add breadth, add depth if you wanted to as well, which would be pretty cool. And so you can throw a lot more stuff into the ring when it comes to Necromunda. So yeah, some two new gangs and a whole bunch of terrain coming out this weekend.
We also have news for Warcry, including some terrain. Please don't let it be too much.
I'm waiting to see if it is.
Ben, what's the crack of Warcry, man?
Yeah, so we've seen a couple of these previews over the last couple of months, but now this weekend is finally seeing the pre-orders go live for a new warband for Warcry, which is called the Spire Tyrants. So if you don't know who the Spire Tyrants are, they're the warbands that exist within the Varan Spire in the Realm of Chaos. And they look down on all the other warbands who are trying to vie for Archaon's favor with dismay, and they hate them to their core. And so they are out to go and show them exactly who is on top. And it's them. The set comes with some really cool.
Do they not like Archaon then?
No, they really like Archaon, but they think that everyone else should be nowhere near Archeon because they're the best. They're like, no, he's our Chaos Daddy. That's what they say.
Ah,
this is really freaking me out.
Check that. Is it the dwarf?
No. Check that eyeball out on the bottom right, staring out at you.
Of the fish
that's part of the helm.
That's not fish man. I'm gonna say
it is a fish. Oh no, it's not. It's a goat.
It's a beast man.
It's a beast man.
Look at him. That's part of the helmet. That's creepy. Not his eye.
No, it looks like a creepy eye to me, Justin.
That's not a creepy eye. All right, what else we got in here?
Right. So that set's pretty cool because it comes with some units that you can use in Age of Sigmar as well. So obviously they haven't really done anything with the Marauder kit for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
But this is another thing that you can use to try and spice up your Chaos armies, especially if you're doing something like the Slaves of Darkness, which came out not too long ago.
I would just buy boxes of that for Marauders.
They did split these out as unit boxes, if you remember a while back.
It also comes with the Chaos Duardin that you can see in there as well. So you see the guy, he's got a little bit of a weird Cousin It thing going on with the beard and stuff, but it looks very, very cool indeed. He stuffed that helmet onto his head very, very nicely.
I like his underbite.
But at least his helmet is shorter than he is. proper Chaos Dwarf. Yeah.
But as well as the Chaos Warband there for the Spire Tyrants, there's also the big new monster. So there's the Ogroid Myrmidon, which is getting thrown into the mix. One of my coolest looking monsters that I've seen so far for what they're doing in Age of Sigmar. Really like the look of it. We saw a Ogroid before, the Thaumaturge in Silver Tower, which was a little bit of a mage type character. This then shows off a new updated version of that, as you can see there. Looking very cool indeed. So as well as the Chaos Warband for the Spire Tyrants that's coming out, they've also put together actual box sets that will allow you to play some of the other factions that were introduced into Warcry when it first launched. But you can actually get them together. You had to go and buy separate boxes and then build your warband from there. And you had the little card packs, if you remember. But now they're going to be bringing some bits together. So you're going to have one for Order, one for Destruction, and one for Death. So for Order, you've got the Stormcast Eternals there in the Vanguard Chamber, as you can see. Then you've got the Gloomspike Gits, or Squigs, as we like to call them there. You know, well, the Night Goblins, anyway, from old Warhammer, bounce around on their Squigs, which is very cool.
Lovely
and
set,
then finally, that. And then finally, there's the Nighthaunt, which are going to be there for your, if you're going to be playing the Grand Alliance of Death. And they come with a whole bunch of the sort of like Cairn Wraith-style creatures and the Banshees and that kind of thing as well. So if you want to play Warcry, but you don't want to play as one of the Chaos Warbands, then you can now pick up these as sort of like a nice intro into the game world without having to go down the path of Chaos and supporting Archeon, that kind of thing. And there are plenty of reasons why all of these different factions would be fighting in the Realm of Chaos to try and stop them or aid them or do something else at the same time.
And reason number one is if you like Warcry as a game, and you want to play something else, this is a great way to do it. I wonder, will the cards be available separately, Ben, for those of us that already have all those models?
I'm not entirely sure on that front. I'd have to wait and see what happens when it goes live later on today and stuff.
Yeah, it's the only complaint I kind of have is that those card conversion sets were there at the start, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
And it's not a huge amount of work to package up a deck of cards.
Yeah.
Like, look at that, Warren. Look, there's a bell in the middle.
I like that.
You must be well chuffed.
It's the bell on the end that does it for me, Lloyd.
Well, you see, there's one little guy just carrying an urn in the back there, which is kind of cool.
It's a drum.
It's a drum.
Is it a drum? Oh, right. Yeah. It looked like a drum. I was wrong. I'm sorry.
Unless he really hates his grandfather, he's just beating the end of the urn.
I don't know. When Warren's gone, you know, if he goes into an urn, donk, donk, he's still in there.
I will haunt you, boy, if you do that to me.
I think you'd haunt me anyway.
So, they did have the card decks. Mm. They sold out. And then they were gone.
Yeah.
Please don't do that. Right. You know, these card decks are cool, and I don't think there's any reason why they couldn't be continuously in stock.
Well, it was my gripe from last week. They made the Necromunda ones limited edition.
Yeah. I can understand dice and stuff like that being limited edition. Hmm. No issue with dice being limited edition, coming in limited run, selling out, and then people stick them on eBay for silly amounts. That's fine. You do what you do. You be you, I be me. But when it comes to the cards...
Yeah, that's actual gameplay stuff.
Yeah, and there's no reason for them to go out of stock. Mm. You know, and even if they did end up sitting on shelves or something like that somewhere for a while, you know, they're not that expensive for it to have been a major issue. You know, I can understand the production of dice and stuff. They can't be complicated. It all comes in from China. The cards could be printed by a company, you know, down the road.
I'd be happy if they just completely converted it to a PDF after they had done the run. Something I could cut out and put into a card sleeve and actually use as a normal card.
Yeah, no, we officially don't condone anything of that nature at all. It has to be produced by the company. And it has to be purchased, and it has to go through an authorized dealer.
Okay.
That's the official stance.
Okay.
There you go. Officially.
Fair enough.
Justin, we can make like 10p if we sell a deck of them cards, man.
All right, you ready for your terrain?
Yes, I am ready for the terrain. I've been looking forward to it.
So they've been doing some really cool stuff for Warcry, where they've done a whole bunch of different sort of like packaged battlefields that you'd be able to set up and play, a little bit like they did with the core set where you, you know, had rules for setting up terrain and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
One of the new ones they're doing for that is this new Soldrain Forest set, which you can see here, which comes with some new trees that have been updated to fit into the kind of Mortal Realms and give a little bit more of a heroic proportion to everything. But as well as the trees, you also get some of those big ruin segments as well. So if you want to lay down a little bit of a maybe a temple to Sigmar that's been reclaimed by the woodlands and that kind of thing, then you've got that option there at the same time. I'd assume it's going to come with some interesting stuff when it comes to setting up battlefields and that kind of thing, because they've normally done that before in the past. I think these look really good. And for anyone who really wants to play like old Warhammer as well in the old world, you could always use these as like a little bit of the Drakwald Forest as well, because I know a lot of people are really getting stuck back into that kind of thing too. So there's some really nice options there when it comes to trees. And I think there's really nice little bits of character and narrative driven into those as well. So you can see the little dead bodies and all sorts of stuff underneath the roots. And it looks very cool. There's a little bit of ancient woodland within the Mortal Realms.
Is there anything else in this news story, Ben?
Yes.
There was a little bit of an art concept peek at what Teclis is going to look like as well. So Teclis, as we discussed on previous shows, is turning into a god, and he's in the search for his own elven race to bring back to the forefront in Age of Sigmar. And so that's the new take on him that you'll hopefully be seeing in model form. He does come with his very traditional looking sword and his staff that you might remember from his old character. But other than that, he's definitely ascended to a type of godhood within the world of Age of Sigmar now.
He's got up there with Slayed in the mutton chop sideburns.
I think Teclis looks female. I think that face is beautiful.
That's elves. That's elves for you. It's lovely.
I love it as a piece of art. I think it's great. Mm.
Interesting to see how many fiddly bits it comes with when it comes to the plastic kit, but there you go.
Oh, many.
there'll be lots, I'm sure. And it'll be held to the base by one 2mm piece of plastic.
Yes.
No doubt.
Well, it'll probably have a couple of contact points at best.
So, right. In other news, Games Workshop have been working on a new ident.
Yes. So this is a little bit of just quick news, effectively, but we can have a little bit of chat as well. But the thing about this one that I thought was quite cool is that they had a big long post that went up on their Warhammer community website talking about the effort that had gone into creating this ident that will be used across all of their digital media going forward. And obviously it looks at both 40K and the world of Age of Sigmar as well, with a Stormcast Eternal and a Space Marine in the midst of it, with their rousing music in the background that you will hopefully be playing in every Games Workshop store from now on. But this will be used for the likes of Angels of Death when that comes out, which is a sort of like animated adventure with the 3D rendering. There's also Eisenhorn, which is going to be their new real-life series they're working on. And there's also going to be a 40K anthology series, which we've kind of had a little bit of a look at when they did their big sort of teaser thing towards the end of last year. But obviously now, this ident is going to carry on over everything they do in the future when it comes to this digital side of their takeover of the world, effectively, with all things Warhammer. The thing I think is really cool is that it kind of spurred on a lot of people on social media to be talking about what exactly they want to see. And I would love to see them do something to do with Gotrek and Felix. Obviously, they've had the new Gotrek appearing in Age of Sigmar, voiced by Brian Blessed. Imagine getting him involved to do a whole animated show or something. I think that could be pretty awesome.
I don't know where I sat on this.
This is what Space Marine could have been.
Yeah, I didn't even get to that bit, because I watched I watched the whole orchestra thing.
Where to
create this ident, and they didn't go to a creator who did an orchestral piece, just pay them for it. No, they booked an entire orchestral studio and an entire orchestra. Okay, and had the orchestra there in multiple settings, okay, to create the piece of music for this, okay? And
no expense spared.
No expense spared. And for the first time, I did sit back and I thought to myself, maybe you're getting too much cash. You know, the fact that, you know, there's hundreds of, you know, solo musical creators who use digital processes and stuff like that, who could have created a piece of orchestral music that no one in our industry could have told the difference on. But you decided to go down the route of the proper Star Wars.
I think it was very Warhammer.
There is a kind of prestige to doing it this way.
Here's the thing. You watched that video, didn't you?
I watched a bit of it, right, and I flicked through it, yeah.
Are you going to watch the rear of some guy sitting at a computer or lady clicking a mouse with some headphones on?
No, probably not. No, probably not.
So they got some marketing out of it, didn't they?
They did. They did.
They got the prestige.
But if you had took the budget from the brass section and used that to reprint the Warcry cards and keep them in stock.
Poor brass section.
This has me excited because I am really looking forward to seeing what they do with Gregor Eisenhorn.
I am looking forward to the content. I still haven't got over the full orchestra thing yet. Right, let's move on because there's loads more happening in the world.
Yes.
Sorry, Ben. We might have to cut half this show out.
So as well as all the stuff we've been hearing from Games Workshop, there's also a Kickstarter which goes live tomorrow on Sunday, which is from the guys at Footsore Miniatures and Games, and this is for Mortal Gods Mythic. And over the last week or so, we've been getting a look at some of the new sculpting that Trish Carden has been working on for this in terms of the different monsters. Now, in the past, we've seen things like the massive Cyclops and the Hydra and that kind of thing. But this week, we actually got to take a little bit more of a closer look at some really awesome monsters. So we've got the Gorgons themselves, everyone will know Medusa. But as well as Medusa, you can see with the wings, they've also got two of her sisters as well. So if you want to do a little bit of a revenge story or something, or, you know, throw all the different heroes into the mix, you've got the Gorgons that you can get there, turning all your enemies to stone and that kind
of
thing.
Do you know their names?
I do know their names. It's Medusa, Sethno, and Eriel. Eriel?
Someone give that guy a biscuit.
Mm. Well done, my man. Well done.
Look, scroll up. Go back to the picture. Stay. Look, Warren. Round shield.
Feel angry. Feel angry.
Now, to be fair, because of her body shape, she probably would be better with a Roman
scutum.
So, a Roman scutum would have been better there.
I was going to say, Trish went to a little bit of detail.
Sorry, we've got to take a moment to get to let that one sink in. She scootums about.
Come on, you're laughing.
And then you wonder why I love this man so hard. Sorry, Ben.
I was going to say, Trish actually went into a little bit of detail about the sculpting of these and that kind of thing. They stand pretty much higher than maybe two or three men. In sort of 28 mil scale, so they're pretty dominating on the tabletop. They especially went for that kind of design with Medusa herself sort of leering over with the wings as well to give her a little bit more of a haunting look. But as well as that, you've also got a set of three harpies as well. So if you want to do some stuff with Jason the Argonauts or Odysseus or that kind of thing, you're going to have some harpies to throw into the mix as well. So at the moment, we've seen the likes of the Cyclops, we've seen the Hydra, we've seen the Gorgons, and we've seen the Harpies there. Hopefully we'll see a few more little extra bits and pieces as the Kickstarter comes together. Got my fingers crossed for some Greek heroes being thrown into the mix as well. That could be kind of cool. And as well as all the monsters, obviously there's going to be some new rule updates and that kind of thing. So you can use all these monsters and heroes in your games on the tabletop alongside the traditional Mortal Gods rules that they've been working on. So yeah,
and that perfectly segs us well into Poll of the Week, a brand new addition to the Weekender that we're experimenting. And Justin is looking at me with scared eyes going, I wasn't expecting this.
I'm hearing this and it's just like, no. What?
So Poll of the Week is our chance to ask you the burning questions, the questions that will make a difference. And this week, the question is it pronounced Minotaur or Minotaur?
No, Minotaur.
How are you going to get people to pronounce this when they're typing it in?
I don't know. We'll find some fancy way of writing it. So is it pronounced Minotaur or Minotaur?
No, it's Minotaur.
Minotaur.
Send your audio clips in now.
Minotaur or Minotaur? So there'll be a link that you can click the link and put it, and we will finally be able to put this to bed, because he was saying, oh, hopefully we'll see some other monsters. I was going to say, I want to see a Minotaur. And I just know that somebody's going to go, no, Minotaur, it's Minotaur.
But that's not right. It is a Minotaur.
It is a Minotaur. Yep. So that's two votes for it. Give me a high five, brother. Yeah.
Look at that.
The brothers. Together.
So that's you told, said, Jerry?
Minotaur.
I say Minotaur.
You would say Minotaur, yeah, as well, yeah.
Because it's Taurus, the bull.
Yeah, Minotaur.
Minotaur. I say Minotaur.
Yeah. Oh, right. You can join him and be wrong, or you can vote in the poll. Poll of the week.
How many have we got?
Be with us.
You've got three so far.
That's ben? Enough for a crusade.
Do you need at least three?
Benjamin,
okay, Ben, you may continue now. Poll of the week, guys. Awesome. Awesome stuff.
How does Ben say it?
Amazing, a different...
Oh. Minotaur. It's Minotaur for,
yeah,
Taurus.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, guys, let's put this to bed. Then the next time somebody calls me up on it, I can point to the poll
link
and
to
say,
this video.
Suck that.
Don't worry. I pointed them to the Oxford English Dictionary and the phonetic section on it, and they still didn't accept that. So clearly they can't read. I know.
A tabletop poll will carry more weight
than the OED.
Right. Well, we talk a little bit about DC.
Yeah, go for it.
Because last week we had Critical Role launched a new universe onto Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
Which we thought was awesome. This week, DC are launching a new world onto Dungeons and Dragons. Next week, who could it be?
Gotta be Marvel.
Disney, that's the next one. But no, so this is DC Comics, and in particular their Black Label section, which does a lot of the sort of weirder stuff on the sidelines. And they have a comic book series called The Last God, which is a really awesome comic book series that I dived into after hearing this news, read a little bit through. It's a dark fantasy world, and the storyline that they tell in the comic books follows two different fellowships of heroes. One from the old times, maybe 30 years ago, and one from the modern day, and how the sort of the mistakes of the past are being replicated in the future. And it's got lots of gritty, nasty body horror in it and all sorts of horrible things. Blood and guts, grim, dark, everything you could ever want. Well, that world, which has been penned by some fantastic authors and illustrators, is now being brought to 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons. So you'll have an entire new source book, which will allow you to play as all of the different races, fight against all the different monsters, and, you know, go on some of the adventures that these heroes had within this world, The Last God, which is called Cain Anun. As I say, the actual artwork and everything that they've done for the sort of development of this world is pretty awesome, in fact. A lot of the stuff is very tied into kind of a lot of the fantasy tropes. So you've got the typical elves and dwarves and Viking-style Creek guys from the north, that kind of thing. But they've done a little bit of a spin on it. And as I say, there's almost like this little bit of a darker tone running through everything that they've done. A little bit sort of like, think 70s, 80s kind of fantasy books and that kind of stuff. They've now obviously ported this over into the source book, which would include, as I say, all these races, a whole bunch of different subclasses for a bunch of the normal classes that you get within the world of Dungeons and Dragons. It's going to be all the monsters, and there's going to be a whole bunch of adventure hooks for you to go on as well. So yeah, if you have been reading this series, which I would highly recommend, go and get it on like a Kindle or something like that, and give it a flick through. It's about £2.50 an issue, so it's not too bad. Give it a read, see what you think, and then if you want to take that into your role playing games, there's going to be a source book coming out very, very soon indeed. So
Ben, I'm going to put you on the spot, man.
Yes.
You know I love to do it. So if you had to choose, you could only choose one, and it would be what you would end up spending the rest of your life with. Would it be Matt's? Would it be Mercer's?
I know which way this is going.
Would it be Mercer's world, or would it be the DC world?
Well, considering Matt Mercer is a wonderful human being, it would have to be the world of Exandria and Wildemount that is coming out very, very soon indeed.
Which perfectly leads me to a brand new segment called Poll of the Week. No, I'm not going to have you on that one. We'll stick to Minotaur, Minotaur, or whatever the hell it is. Minotaur. Okay, right. It does, though, lead me to a thing. So every week from now on, okay, we're going to set you to work on Tabletoppers, okay? We want to find the hidden gems. We want to give a shout out to the little guys out there. Every week, we want to highlight someone who some of you should support, someone that deserves your support. I have a few in mind. Ben has picked this week's, okay? I do get to blame you, Ben, for this
one?
We can hardly tell. You can blame me for it. Yeah, okay.
No, trust me, this is clearly a Ben choice.
Right, so this is a Ben choice this week. Next one, either myself or Jerry will pick, okay? But please, if you know of a smaller companies, people that are getting into it, or people that create a small diamond in the rough kind of product or thing within our industry, let us know, and we want to feature them. This week, for little guy of the week or indie of the week, or what did you call them? Youngling of the week. You know, it's a pick your poisons, right?
Seem to be murdered.
In fact, hang on, there's the segment name. Pick your poison.
Pick your poison, okay? Because, Justin, I'm worried about what's going to come up here because these guys are called hardcore
Safe. It's Ben. Of course we're safe. He's lawful good.
Oh, I understand it. They're not hardcore space dwarves. They're space dwarves by hardcore miniatures.
Yes.
There you go.
They look great. Ben, what can you tell us about hardcore?
So hardcore miniatures are actually a site that we've looked at in the past, I believe, maybe a couple of months ago now, but they do these really awesome orcs and that kind of thing, sort of alternatives for use in the grim dark future or whatever setting you might want to dive into. But
you mean squats for 40K, yes?
Yeah. But okay. Now we've got some squats for 40K here, you can see, who are by a sculptor called Capital, who's actually got some stuff up on Thingiverse as well, but they've been brought to the hardcore miniatures website, as you can see here, in this four pack there. I really like the look of these miniatures. I think the detail on them is absolutely fantastic. Obviously, the main focus has to be the beards. And I think a beard makes a dwarf. And in this case, the beards are fantastic. As well as the...
For any dwarves that are incapable of growing beards, we would like to apologize in advance for your offense.
No, I'm not apologizing. and the really cool thing I liked about these is that you could use them in a whole bunch of different things. So obviously, we talked about the grim, dark future of 40K, so you could use them in things like Necromunda and that kind of thing. But also, if you're playing games like Starfinder, for example, so if you like the role-playing game from Paizo, you could use these as your player character in that, because all the fantasy races have been transported into a sci-fi setting. And of course, you've got things like Warpath and that kind of thing as well, with Dead Zone and stuff, if you want to go down the Mantic path.
Let's see the action pose again there.
Which one?
The action pose, the one where the guy's running.
The one running.
I think it's really cool. One of the interesting things about these that a lot of people pointed out, obviously, as it tends to be the case of these kind of dwarves, is that they actually have knees. These dwarves can actually articulate their lower bodies. So.
Nice. So they don't waddle, they
run.
That's
a group shot again.
Hey, dwarves are natural sprinters.
Bring up the group shot there, do we
see? Squad. See, Ben, you're saying 40K. I'm just instantly thinking Necromunda.
That's what I'm saying, yes. It could be used for anything to do with the 40K universe. We also should have a link to their store, so you can go and check out some of the other stuff that they've been doing.
All right.
So you can access both their sci-fi and their modern section to have a look at some of the other
I want to see their wizard. So click on
fantasy. I don't think that's active because it's not in color yet. Oh, well,
there
maybe.
Are a couple of miniatures
let's
in
let's
there.
See. Yeah, go to the wizard.
I'm there.
Okay, let's see.
It's loading.
I have a thing for wizards.
So you've got...
All right, there's no wizards.
No, there's no wizards. Fantasy. There are other miniatures.
Oh, okay. Right.
Steve the Miner.
Honestly, I want to see what they've done for modern.
See what they did there.
So what have they got for modern?
Duke Nukem!
They have Arnold. Yeah.
They've done some really cool stuff when it comes to the modern set. Like a lot of the things, in particular, the guy they've done there who's listed as John is actually Serious Sam. Mm. And the people that actually created the original first-person shooter game that came out, you know, a long time ago now, actually really endorsed that one and thought it was really fun.
No
pre-orders.
Okay, go to the orcs. How do we see?
Orcsies
are always cool.
Yep, and they've got quite a few of them.
Oh, okay.
I love the Ghost Rider one.
Yes, Ghost Orc Biker. Let's see that. Bring it up in all its glory.
Oh, yes.
Oh, hell yes.
So.
He's riding through the town with his head on fire.
I love it. I love it.
I give that orc a blue rinse.
All right, this makes me happy seeing all the component pieces because you can see all your options on here.
Well, guys, there you go. That is... The thing about small companies that we normally wouldn't hear about.
It's a good title for it.
That's a good title. We're getting there. As this show goes on, it's gradually, you know, it's professional. It's right up there. Right. Final piece of news. Okay. Time for a bit of Black Seas.
Yeah. Jerry, you're going to have to do rigging.
Jerry, boaty time.
I don't have to do rigging.
Boaty time. What have we got?
So yeah, this is a selection of new releases that have been done by Warlord for you to use in all your different scenarios and stuff that you might be playing on the high seas with Black Sea. So they've done a set of merchant vessels. So obviously these were very less well-armed and armored boats that would be carrying all your cargo and stuff between the different nations during this period. And this obviously makes them absolutely prime targets for you to either defend them on the high seas or attack them as privateers and or pirates if you wish to try and bring them down as well. A whole bunch of stuff has already been done for these because there's actually a free PDF download called Smuggler's Run, which actually puts together a campaign where both sides will actually have to look after their merchant vessels as they, you know, head across the European waters to try and deliver goods and supplies and soldiers and that kind of thing as well.
That's the bit you love the most, Ben, isn't it? The logistics.
Yeah. Anything that involves Euro shipping ship simulator. But yeah, a really awesome looking set that's really good for that narrative component to the game. Because it's always good, you should, you know, shooting things and blowing stuff up, but it's always good to have a little bit of a story driven into everything you're doing on the tabletop. I think this is a really key thing that they've done here for Black Seas to kind of add that little bit more narrative element to things.
A narrative elephant.
A narrative elephant.
It's handy to have, because I think the very first scenario in the book requires you to use one of the third-rate frigates as a merchant ship that you're both going after. So, you know, from scenario one, day one, you need merchants out there to be having at. Yeah. And most of the conflict around there was privateers.
It's Kickstarter time. We did have a segment here that but we're still working on it. Justin has practice to do. Justin.
Well.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. It's okay, Justin. You don't even need to say anything, man. I know. Stay tuned for that. You'll love it. You will love it. Right. Kickstarter, yeah. Ben. What have we got?
Okay, so the first of these is from Matt's Miniatures, or Matt's Miniaturen, if you want to go for that instead. And this is for Into the Abyss.
Oh!
So if you like your heavy metal-inspired Chaos Warriors,
I do.
Or Abyssal Warriors, as you can see here, this is the Kickstarter for you to get involved with. So Matt's has done some really awesome sculpts in the past, which we've looked at in the weekend of show, but he's back again with a new band of Abyssal Warriors that you can see there. I think there's a good handful of the Chaos Warriors that you can use either as champions dragon for your army.
Yep.
Or yeah, this Foot on Dragon is a major upgrade from Foot on Rock.
I can't fault Foot on Dragon. I can't fault it. I am loving this.
Yeah, but these are absolutely fantastic looking miniatures that he's been working on for a while and he's now bought to Kickstarter. Really nice variety of different sculpts in there if you like that kind of old Chaos Warrior feel. So you can even use these as the leaders for your troops.
Look at that mounted guy.
Yep. Or and you could use the...
Teardrop shields. Did you notice? Teardrop shields. I love this guy.
Yeah, they've got some absolutely fantastic models in here that I really like. They can be expanded on from that Chaos Warrior set into also a group called the Shard Maidens. Now, I'm not as much of a fan of these sculpts as I am of the actual Abyssal Warriors, but I think they're still a really cool sort of narrative add to the warband feel that you might get for this. Because obviously, I was saying you could use them as part of your mass battle army, or you could use them as basically a skirmishing warband on their own. Now, going up against these guys, and the other reason why I picked this Kickstarter, is that there's also a set called the Border Patrol.
Oh, they don't happen to be dwarves, do they, Ben?
They are, in fact.
Oh, of course.
Done in a Viking style, which I think is really cool.
They don't have knees.
These ones don't have knees. They're very much in the old hammer style.
They have a wizard.
Yeah. But the thing that I think is really cool...
You know that one of those guys is a singer called Har. Harmony.
Oh, dear.
That's shockingly bad, isn't it? No, that's really, really bad.
Look. Oh, look. A Minotaur.
Oh, it's a Minotaur. Oh.
Do you see an E in there?
Let me see the sculpt.
It's not out yet.
There is no sculpt yet. Okay. No sculpt yet.
And that's us at the end of the Kickstarter.
Whoa, don't leave. Don't go back up to the Minotaur. You've even got me saying bloody Minotaur now. Minotaur. Look how creepy that is.
Read it.
That's the awesome way to show off a mini. Look at that.
Yep. Right. So he's probably unlocking it. It's probably a stretch goal, Abyssal Minotaur.
Or right. He just hasn't had time to do the sculpt yet.
8 days to go on that one. Mm-hmm. Right. Next up, we have a Peterson Games Kickstarter. This is probably going to be a big one. And this is Glorantha, the Gods of War. 10 days left on this one.
Yeah, so this is a return of a, well, it's a reprint of a game, as well as an expansion that gets added into the mix as well. This is from, as you say, Pidgeon Games, who's done some absolutely amazingly huge games like Cthulhu Wars and all things yeah. like that. Basically, the idea of all of the games that he pretty much creates are big stompy monsters, lots of armies, rampaging around a board, trying to take control of areas, and there's a whole bunch of other stuff thrown into the mix as well. In this case, you're going to be taking on the role of one of these mighty elemental forces that exist within the world of Glorantha, and you'll be fighting for dominance over the game board through a whole bunch of different things. The expansion for this, which is called Empires, adds in a whole bunch of new monsters and factions and all that kind of abilities and that kind of thing, which takes the player count up from, I believe it's 4 up to 8, which is pretty insane. Mm-hmm. So if you like the idea of playing a massively multiplayer game on the tabletop, this one's a pretty good one for you. When it comes down to kind of like the brass tacks of how the game works, you'll start off with your armies and you'll be building those up, and you'll be marching around the board trying to complete quests and take areas, fighting each other, summoning your gods and all that kind of thing. And then there's a really interesting mechanic that ties everything together and kind of makes it a little bit cooperative at the same time, in that there's a part of the board which is called the Chaos Rift. And over time, that's going to fill up and fill up and fill up. And then eventually it's going to explode. And you need to commit a certain amount of your forces into closing the Chaos Rift. Otherwise, bad things happen across the entire of the game board. So you've got to try and weigh up whether or not you want to send your forces into the Chaos Rift to try and help shut it down, or keep them back so that you can defeat your enemy when they inevitably try and attack you later on in the game. So yeah, if you like big, stompy games that involve a lot of, you know, smashing things and destruction and war and that kind of thing, area control games, dudes on the map games, this is basically for you. And as I said, it's a reprint of a game that already went down very, very well indeed. So if you want to get a howling bit now and the expansion and obviously some tweaked rules and that kind of thing, you've got this option to go and check out on Kickstarter right now.
Just send the Empire to bring their moon glow line off to wherever the Chaos are coming from and then leave them there, because nobody cares about the Empire. Screw them.
Okay,
these guys in particular.
Right, there we go. 10 days left on that one, Glorantha. And that wraps us up for yet another week. Mm-hmm. Thank you to everybody that's joined us. As always, it has been a pleasure spending time with you. Big thanks to Ben on the screen, Jerry in a chair, Justin in a chair, Lloyd in a chair. And as always, big thanks to you guys for watching. See you soon. I still think the terrain looks soulless.
Bring it back up.
It's the fact that it's so modular. It's like a fancy stickle bricks. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't tell a story to me. And it just lacks soul.
It looks like generic sci-fi.
Yeah.
If it was covered in the skulls.
No. I think it's the fact that it's so modular, Jerry. I think it's the fact that, you know, I look at it and I can't see a structure to it at all. It just is so higgledy-piggledy. You know, it's almost as if it's been designed specifically just to block some line of sight here or there, or to give the exact amount of elevation to this level or to that level. And it lacks looking like something. And that's perfectly fine. You know, some people may love that, but I like a gaming table to you. I'd like to be able to point at something and say, you're trying to get to the something or other. not you're trying to get to the generic second level of that generic piece of that generic board.
But that's what factories and stuff look like. If this is the underworld, the industrial underworld, they're not going to be sitting there building, oh, well, there's a great architectural design building there, and this looks completely different to that over there. They're using the same stuff over and over again to rapidly build. No?
Yeah.
Not to me.
Well, Warren, there are groups on Facebook that I've seen that actually take this set and use it as a baseline to build from. And then they start grabbing all the other 40K terrain sets and start mixing them into it. There's one person I saw, they actually built a corpse starch vat. So it was this big walkway with these two big pools of blood on either end where bodies were just being chucked in to be turned into corpse starch. Would that make you a little happier seeing something like that mixed into it?
I suppose it's as simple as if I can describe it, then that would make me happy. You know, if I can give it a name, if I can refer to it. Mm. Whereas my problem with a lot of this kind of modulary kind of stuff is it's all just so square and blocky. And
I mean, look, you see, I don't mind it, but that's where you and me differ, because you're always going for the narrative in what you're building on a tabletop, whereas I'm going for playability.
Or Alpha Strike.
No, going careful for that actual
turning,
playability.
Turning down the sarcasm, turning
playability.
It down, turning
but
it
it's
down.
Part of the it's part of the Underhive. Like, you don't look at a slum town in the real world and go, that bed doesn't look different to that bed, because slums all look the same.
But they
the
look
whole
like,
way through it.
Yeah, but you were able to call it a slum town. What can you call that?
Well, it's the Underhive. Well,
it depends, oh, bollocks, you got me.
It also depends which way you're building this, depending on which scenario you're playing, which is where that modularity is really good, because you get a lot of use out of the one set of terrain.
Yeah, well, I much preferred the...
You see, when you get into dense populations, I was recently watching a program about population and Feeding the World and stuff, but they were filming in...
Did you let them know it was Christmas time?
Nope. They were filming in Africa somewhere, and there's this city where they've basically reclaimed rubbish and built houses on pillars and stuff on top of this rubbish. And it's like one of the people that lives there estimates, oh, there's 2 million people. And every part of it looked the same as every other part of it. Every building, although different, looked the same, because it was all built of the same materials and stuff cobbled together.
But bloody queen! It doesn't mean it needs to look like...
Thank you, Phil the Greek.
Like this.
You do realize, Warren, this is probably all built from an STC, so of course it's all going to be the same.
Exactly. What are you saying, Ben?
I was going to say, the way I look at it is this kind of gives you a little bit of a... I know it sounds a bit crass to say, but it gives you like a little bit of a blank canvas to begin with. And it's the kind of thing where you've got all these modular elements that you see here, but then maybe later down the line, because they do seem to be supporting, you know, Necromunda quite heavily, they're going to be bringing in some slightly more characterful pieces that will then go alongside this kind of thing. But I think it comes down to the people who are building with this stuff, because I've seen some people like Justin who've done some absolutely fantastic things with this, and they use it effectively like a little bit of a Lego box set to do whatever the hell they want and build strange and interesting structures and all sorts of different things. So
yeah,
and
yeah,
a bit you're of, missing your cardboard bits in between. Design,
a bit of paint will take you a long distance too, because exactly, we built all that big 40K city off of what was essentially a very modular sort of set.
We built this city.
And we built, and you were able to go, that bit's this bit, and that bit's
are
that
you,
bit.
Are you deliberately trying to get as many songs into this episode as we can? Have I rumbled you on this one? Justin,
yeah.
Search for War Cry Terrain. Okay, I'm only going to make a very quick point on this, but the point will basically boil down to, I'm right. That is sarcasm again. I'm toning it down,
All right, so Warcry Terrain.
Warcry
Terrain. Images.
Now, look at the Warcry Terrain that was in the starter set. Click that one there.
This one?
Okay, yeah, somebody on eBay has it out of stock, all right? So,
open image in your tab,
Oh, and it's tiny. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, that really supports your argument right there.
Wait,
totally modular.
No, yeah, but go back.
That looks so boring.
Give over. Give me a bigger version of it. There. Even that one. Yes, there.
Okay.
Right.
Open image in new tab.
No,
there you go.
Now, for the audience at home, I'm not going to cut to it because you don't need to see it because I'm right.
No, cut to it. Now that was a far superior set of modular terrain that works to a particular you draw the card and it tells you exactly where to set the pieces.
Uh-huh.
And you and I can say, oh, you're going to the Bell of Doom, you're going to the big head of awesomeness. You're going across the bridge of
right. So what you're basically saying is we need, you need to go back to the Necromunda terrain, have it as is, and stick a big head and a bell on it.
Well, you make it something that you can refer to. It's so.
It's not the repeats that you mind.
Oh, because the repeats in this.
It's the fact that there's repeats, but not one bit in the repeat that you're really going to go in and go that bit's that bit.
Yeah. There's no crescendo to it. There's nothing to it that makes it stand out as a piece of narrative.
I see a lift.
The lift. Yeah.
Get to the elevator.
Oh, God. Get to the elevator.
Get to the steps.
Yeah. the stairway to heaven, yeah. Okay, look, as always, believe it or not, I can accept that I may be wrong. But I'm not.
You are.
So, can I interject with a bit of pedantic historianism?
Pedant away.
Yeah. I'm going to pedant on this one, but we'll all learn it.
Is it about myrmidons?
We will all learn a thing from this, okay? Mm-hmm. He is a character that clearly fights on his own.
Yes.
Yet he's carrying a shield that was designed specifically for the shield wall.
Maybe there are others that we haven't seen yet.
This is something I've learned. I've been doing some research on shields, okay? Yeah. And I learned that the round shield that carried by the Myrmidons and the Spartans and stuff like that there.
Hoplites.
Was round specifically because it was designed for the shield wall. And that if you were someone who fought outside of a shield wall, which in historical terms, you pretty much didn't, you know, because it would be senseless to go out onto a battlefield.
If you're in like an honor duel or something, 1v1.
Yes, but...
Yoo-hoo, here I am.
I don't like you. Come and have a go.
Come take my honor.
But if you generally are separated, you're done for, okay? Yeah. But if you were doing that style of fighting, then what you actually need is a longer shield. So you had, obviously the Romans had the...
Scutum.
So the Roman scutum, okay, was bulky and stuff, but it allowed you to do... The interesting other kinds of shield wall, like the testudo.
Yes, tortoise.
The tortoise, okay. But actually, the most effective shield design was the kite design, which happens to be your favorite, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. Right.
Is it not the teardrop Lloyd uses? The kite's got a flat top?
No. Anything like that. Okay. It's called the kite.
Okay.
And the kite design is perfect from a shield design perspective. Because it is its shape is designed to give you the appropriate amount of protection for each level of for the importance of each part of the body. So your torso obviously requires more protection because of your shape than your legs. So it is shaped that way. So it cuts down on the added weight you would have had with the scutum, and it's not the round shield typically. Has too much. It has wasted protection on each side, which is why it's used in the shield wall.
And leaves your legs exposed.
And it leaves your legs exposed.
So are you saying you'd prefer to see him with a massive Norman kite shield on there?
Exactly.
I look forward to seeing that conversion.
Yeah, so in this instance, okay, I think my pedanticism, if it kicked in, he would have had a shield that would have been more kite-like. Or, to be fair, a grizzly bear like that wouldn't even carry a shield.
Well, he
might carry one of them wee tiny... What do you call it?
Buckler.
A buckler.
It's not going to carry a buckler. It looks stupid, a tiny wee buckler on something that size.
Well, you see, I've actually seen bucklers where it comes down from the hand and then just goes right down along the forearm, and it's only about a foot wide.
Yeah, or a tree trunk.
He looks epic as he is with that shield.
Yeah, he does.
This is where the epicness of the look comes shining
come here
through.
A second, I want to check that beard. Is it getting any more grey?
It is getting grey.
All you do is on the front of this strappage he has here.
Yes,
you make like a papoose and you just hang a Chaos Marauder off that, which is both protection and when you get up close, additional attacks.
Yes, and when he's dead, you can eat him.
Yeah, a handy snack between meals. Very important.
Come on, I'm allowed to unleash a little bit of inner Grognard every now and again. But hey, you've learned something. The round shield was designed for shield wall.
Okay,
so a big individual character stomping around on his own wouldn't get much benefit from that.
aside from looking cool.
Well, apart from he has a shield.
Well,
apart from the benefit of a shield.
Well, a shield versus no shield. Yeah.
They've got that, I'm trying to remember the name of the tree. Oh, it's like Baruba or something like that with a big, deep root structure.
Yes.
They're almost like cages.
The baobab or bulbob or something.
It's not more like a mangrove?
Something bee-based anyway. But just having those sort of wooden cages. And I thought you could stick a dead body in there quite happily. And then I seen actually a skeleton on one of the other bases. I'm thinking, it'd be lost in there.
Ben, okay, right? I don't want to be a negative ninny here, okay?
Yeah. It's normally my job.
Bring the picture back. We're going to want that now in a minute.
But I'm going to call it as I see it, okay? But before I do, it's always worth to research what you're going to say before you say it, okay? Right. So, Ben, that weird root cagey structure,
yes.
Has it got a gameplay thing about it or what? Why is that there? Do we know of any specific reason why that's there?
The only reason I could think of is one that I've completely just made up myself off the top of my head.
Good man, that'll do for me.
They are magical trees and they maybe wander across the realms, potentially a little bit like the Ents would do or something.
This is not Tanith.
They're there as a home for your bars and badgers.
Oh, exactly, of course, there you go.
That's it, Ben.
Okay,
They're entrances to the Sylvaneth realms beneath the earth.
Trees are something that is close to my heart, okay? I am recently been working on a kind of like a creepy dead forest kind of thing. Okay, now I initially went looking for the old Games Workshop trees, which I will freely admit I didn't like them when they came out, and it wasn't until the point that I could no longer get them that they suddenly became what I wanted, and I thought they were great. Lloyd did a lovely job on them on one of the demo tables that we run here. So I went looking for them and realized you couldn't get them. And all you could get was these strange fairy ring trees, which I really dislike. I dislike, there's something just really weird about them. That root thing just doesn't do it for me. So
the thing that I really like about it, actually, just before you dive in, is that it gives you the impression of a lot of the ancient woodland photos you see of like the depths of Europe in the Black Forest and that kind of thing, or up in Scandinavia. And I think that's maybe why they tried to go through that, to give it that idea of this twisted forest that is not welcoming to anybody who comes into it. Maybe.
Let me give you an alternative.
Okay.
Okay. Go to printablescenery.com, because ultimately I couldn't find the trees that I was after. So I ended up running them through a 3D printer of my own, okay, or on my own. But if you have a friend with a 3D printer or one of them local fab labs or whatever, okay, you could do that.
There's one that we use.
No,
that's a mushroom.
That's a mushroom, Justin.
Well, you did use some mushrooms in it.
Justin, let's leave mushrooms. All right. If I'm going to get through this show, we can't talk mushrooms, man. Okay? So.
Punched in tree.
No, scroll down and I will get you. There you go. Do you see them gloomwood trees?
Yeah.
And the vomiting tree.
Yeah, I've got it opening.
Open them both. I don't need anything else. That's enough. There's other
trees. I quite like the twisty tree up above. It's
Yeah. There's loads, but I'm just gonna pick you out the dead creepy trees.
So there's your gloomwood trees.
Right. So these gloomwood trees. Now, I'm gonna make a case for this, right? These guys at Printable Scenery are really switched on. Those trees print without supports.
Yes.
Right? They're designed to just work. You don't need to worry about all these supports and rubbish and stuff like that there. You put them on your print bread and you press go. The other reason that the 3D printing is a great way to go down the route of this kind of scenery is you're able to adjust the size and the proportions of each tree when it goes to print.
You
can make them bigger, smaller,
fatter or thinner.
And I was able to get many of these trees printed, okay? And each tree, so let's do a cost, just a little cost analysis, okay? So to buy the actual trees themselves.
It is $10.
$10, right, buys the trees, okay? Mm-hmm. So that's $10 spent and you have no trees, okay?
Mm-hmm. You're a negative tree.
You're not a negative tree.
Oh, you're a negative tree.
Because you've got the paper.
You're negative $10.
Paid over some paper.
Okay, you're not negative tree yet. Okay, you're negative $10, but so you've went and you've bought those fairy ring trees.
Yeah.
I can't remember how much they cost. Ben will find out for me.
Okay. I don't think we've got a price for them yet.
So find out how much the big box of the fairy trees costs, because it already exists as a big box on the website. So get me what the retail price of that is. Mm. So I'm currently, you've paid X amount for your big box of trees. I have spent $10 and have no trees at this point. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's make the assumption you have access to a 3D printer. Okay. Otherwise, these are going to be damn expensive trees. But let's make the assumption that you have access at least to that.
It's not $10 plus the cost of a 3D printer.
No, no. But I'm gonna take into account the material costs and the energy costs. Okay. So Ben, how much is the fairy ring trees?
I cannot find trees now on the Games Workshop website.
You see.
That was tremendous help.
Whenever you go looking for the thing, it's not there. Right. I estimate, Honey. Justin, that each one of those trees printed to a good size, about yawn length, all right, would cost less than £1.
From a reel, you'll probably get about 25 trees. So if it's 15 quid a reel, that's about 90p a tree-ish.
Yeah, about 80...
90p a tree.
So let's say you're saying he's right.
About £1 then.
Well, before power, that's just material.
So you're saying he's right.
Yeah, so about £1.
Roughly, yeah.
Okay. So so one £15 reel of a decent PLA, I should, in theory, be able to get 15 trees from that.
Well, I would say more, but yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, like Justin says.
15 good-sized trees, maybe 20, 30 of various sizes.
Well, I remember whenever we ran them out, we did about 25 of them, and that was varying the sizes.
Yeah.
Plus your electrical cost, like Justin pointed out.
Okay, so say
A little bit of your rent for the amount of time it took to print them, because you need a house to sit in to print them.
Right, so 20 quid.
Yeah.
Plus the food you had to eat while you were waiting for it to print. Point.
Okay, Ben?
I was going to say, so I found the wildwood trees, which are what I then used to create this set alongside the ruins and things.
Yeah.
And for that set, it's £30 for three trees, so £10 each.
So you've spent £30 and you've got three lovely plastic trees. Well, lovely, let's see. You've got quality. Plastic trees, quality plastic trees. For £30, you've got three of them.
Yeah.
I have spent $10 and then another £20. And I have 25.
Yeah.
So it's really good looking trees.
£1.20 a tree. And you can basically double the amount you're getting. Well, no, more than double your amount.
So you have enough to put down an objective on a gaming table. I have enough to make a gaming table.
And you can make them fat.
And I can change the dimensions of them.
That, and you can print as many of them as you ever want.
You're a tree feeder.
You're not blind by this. You can go back and buy another £15 reel. Okay. So for £50, £50 less because $10 is not the same as £10. But for £50 now, for an extra £20, I now have 50 trees to your three trees.
Well, they would probably have five trees at that point, because 50.
Yeah, I've spent £20 more, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So for 20...
The other set is £30. You get three trees, so they would get two more trees.
Oh, God, he's right. I never realized it. Yeah, sorry,
Cassie. Numbers.
Got to roll that sarcasm back. And then you guys wonder why I bring my sarcasm death ray out on this.
You say Star Crash.
Right.
Still haven't watched that.
Anyway, so can I just get back to the point on the Warcry terrain, okay? I'm sorry, it's fairly uninspired.
That's not modular.
No, it's not.
It should be modular.
I don't like it.
No.
But there's a big head there. No, there's two big heads.
Right. For a start, all those bits and pieces, there's nothing, they're not there to play on. They're just there for you to walk around. Okay? So every piece of that doesn't add any new dimension to the game in any sense. It's just there for you to be an obstacle that you move around. You might get a slight cover save from it.
In games of like Age of Sigmar, they do tend to have it so that certain terrain elements do offer potentially raw benefits and stuff like that. So there may be something in the larger game.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not climbing over it, or it's not the nice terrain. I want to see more of the nice terrain that was in the starter set. It was inspired. It was I really do, credit where credit's due, amazing terrain.
Some of the big terrain packs they've done as well have been really gorgeous.
This is half free pack.
Yeah.
And half fairly uninspired. Mm. You know, it's adding a bit of theme to your gaming table, but it's not adding much in the way of dynamicness to your gaming table.
Well, we don't know. Because
at this rate, I prefer the Necromunda stuff to that.
There might be some rules that go along with this terrain.
That's because
you can activate a terrain component.
Slowly sinking into your head that the Necromunda terrain is spot on. That's why. What way is it coming out? Is it coming out on TV or streaming? What way? What?
I don't know. I mean, like, I know they're doing live action for Eisenhorn. I know they've got the guy who was doing, he did Death Watch on YouTube as like a Partworks video series. They've brought him on to do some Blood Angel stuff.
Yeah,
we see from the trailer there's going to be some Stormcast Eternal stuff, which might be great for Age of Sigmar because we might finally get a sense of life in the world.
And get a story.
So what I'm trying to establish is this coming out through some sort of network or is this going to be a direct fed thing?
They're still experimenting at this stage. I'm sure they've all these deals all tied up long ago, but we just don't know about them. But
I'm hoping
we'll
Netflix.
Wait and see. Any kind of media like that, well, not any kind of media. Obviously, some media could do the game more harm than good. But it'd be good to see some good stuff. Yeah. Come out. Some stuff that they fully commit to. But as I've said in the past, it'll be interesting to see the difference between what a credible director wants to make in terms of a piece of content and what Games Workshop want to make in terms of a piece of content. Mm. I am not a credible director, okay? So I look at the likes of Nightfall, which is all about the Crusades.
Allegedly.
And I think to myself, what the hell's going on here? You know, the best bit of the whole show was the first 3.5 minutes of episode one, and now it's all this lovey-dovey crap of queens and stuff sleeping with all the.
Have you made it through to the end of that series?
No, I haven't. No,
it's not really worth it.
Okay, so
the ending is a bit.
So I would go into that as a non-credible director, and I have to admit it would be a non-credible director, and I'd be saying no. See all this intrigue and love interests and this. This Weasley little guy and stuff. We don't need any of that, right? Do you see that battle sequence in Akira, right? Let's expand that out over 18 episodes and do it that way. Now, my point being, that might make it a better show for us. And Nightfall's probably not the best example of this.
Really?
But credible directors tend to want to tell different stories. And they will tell stories generally that involve, you know, people and humanity and human aspects like love making.
What's more human than scooping up all of the psychers off a planet and feeding them to the emperor?
So yeah. I just don't know how it's going to pan out.
This is why I think for the live action, they are best doing an Inquisitor's story and not just a Space Marines one. Because the Space Marines one, let's be honest, it's just going to be bounce in, fight some stuff. Come back, get a purity seal, bounce in, fight some bigger stuff, come home. Oh, look, I lost my arm. I've got an augmatic now. Let's keep going.
Yeah, well, they could tell an interesting story.
Well, they're
going
to try to with the Blood Angels. It's CGI.
Blood Quest.
Are they just remaking the comic?
It would be great if they did Blood Quest. That'd be amazing. But, you know.
See, I can't think of any significant piece of even award-winning TV or award-winning cinema in the fantasy or the sci-fi realms that didn't include the actual emotional stories and the romance and blah-de-blah-de-blah of its main characters. But none of that exists.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to create it.
Where?
With the... All right, so I'm re-listening to Ravnor at the minute, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's following an inquisitorial warband, and you do see the interplay between the different team members.
So who's making love to who?
Well, currently Kara Swole just fell in love with a local Medicaid, so she's
getting... I don't know who those people are.
Yeah, but you haven't listened to the stories. But it is within those stories, those inquisitorial warbands.
It's no Grimm trying to get into my Lindy's panties, mind you.
All right. Yeah.
It's another Inquisitor story from many minutes ago.
This is a lass who's an acrobat that could probably snap your neck with her ankles.
Well, my Lindy was an assassin.
I see.
So it'll be interesting because I know that there's stories that we as gamers would love to see. But as I said, my version of Nightfall would be amazing to us, but to the wider... If we're talking about how this takes it to the wider audience, I just don't know how it translates.
It would be amazing to you. Sounds boring as hell to me.
The Siege of Acre.
Stab 2. Over 18
episodes.
Stab 5.
What you need is... Kevin Feige. You need somebody to go, this is how
they would act.
This is what our universe is.
And so then Kevin Feige of Mandalorian fame, is that who we're talking about?
No, of Marvel Universe.
Oh, of Marvel. Sorry, my apologies.
The man who's responsible for the entire Marvel Universe. The man who turned around and told Edgar Wright to go away because his version of Ant-Man wasn't what the studio wanted to portray.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had to do reshoots and get Joe Cornish in to finish it.
Yeah,
we're so, kind of having the same with Doctor Strange too at the minute.
So you've got that, and whenever they dumped Edgar, people were going, well, obviously it's going to be terrible because Edgar Wright's fantastic. Look at everything else he's done. It's been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know what they're talking about. And then Ant-Man came out and everybody went, Thomas the Tank Engine. That was amazing. So you need...
Thomas the Tank Engine?
So you need somebody like Kevin.
I don't get it. What's the Thomas the Tank Engine reference?
The final fight.
There's a fight on a train set because Ant-Man shrinks. So they fight
on Thomas.
On Thomas. All right,
okay.
But you need...
And they accidentally...
Is epic up until the moment they do the big fright at the end and scared the bejesus out of me.
But spoilers.
That bloody big ant
dog. Everybody's seen it by now. Yeah. But you need that. And I don't know who they're going to get.
Yeah.
Because the only person in charge of the studio at the moment, or in the old days, there used to be somebody in charge of the sculpts, mm-hmm. somebody in charge of 40K, somebody in charge of fantasy.
Yeah.
And they were the directing force.
The gatekeepers.
Yeah. Who went, this is where the story's going. This is where these books are going to go. This is what the rules are going to be like. Now, I think there's just Jez in charge of the studio who, while he developed the Eldar and that sort of thing, he's never done any of the background writing or any of that. It's mm-hmm. been about the style choices. So I imagine this will be a scattershot approach where somebody's doing a live action and somebody's doing an Age of Sigmar animated and somebody else is going to do whatever. And whether or not they all pull in the same direction like the Marvel Universe does remains to be seen, because it could be more like DC than Marvel, where some of the films are good, some of the films are garbage, most of the films are garbage.
It will be interesting. So, it will be interesting. There's a checkered past here because, you know, we were fortunate enough in 2010 to see the director of Ultramarine come out of the screening, a broken man.
Nice.
Yeah, I remember that.
I mean, he came out a broken man from that screening.
That was a different one.
And, was it?
And his exact words to me were, this wasn't the movie that I wanted to make.
That was an event. That was a Games Day 2010.
Wasn't the actual movie. No, that was the trailer of it.
No, they had the original screenings at Games Day.
Was it?
And he came out.
No, they had some preview screenings before that. And then we met him at Games Day when he came out.
No, I think we met him at Games Day first, and then the other screenings came out after that. Games Day, I'm pretty sure.
I thought it was just a preview. It wasn't the full movie at Games Day.
Well, whatever it was, he came out broken, absolutely broken. I have never seen a man more shell-shocked coming out.
They had some good big names on the cast for that particular movie.
Yeah, but it wasn't the movie that he wanted to make.
Yeah,
and that was interesting. This is where this thing about a credible director, what they want to do, and what the universe as it currently stands will allow it to do. It'll be very interesting.
It's why I have high hopes for the Blood Angels one, because the guy that's working on it did a fan-made one for Death Watch, and just based on that is how he got hired by Workshop to be working on the Blood Angels one.
That effectively makes me run cold.
It just makes me run cold as well. That's not a credible director. He might be great, but I mean, if you want this to become the next MCU or the next Star Wars or whatever, it's going to end up having to be run by someone like a J.J. Abrams, okay? And some people maybe go, "Oh God, no." But, you know, someone of that kind of echelon.
Are you trying to feed the mainstream or feed the fan base at this point? Because this guy has already done something that's successfully fed the fan base.
It would have to be mainstream. If you're going to make a movie or a TV show that's going to networks, it will have to go to the mainstream.
Okay.
You can't make it for the fan base, all 15 of us. In terms of the planet, turn the sarcasm gun down a bit.
Well, even if you take that up that few millions, you're still not there. You're still not wide enough audience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like we figured it out 1 year. How many wargamers were on the planet? 2 million or something. We thought.
Oh well, there's more now. But the point is, any credible attempt at this has to be mainstream.
Mm.
It has to be mainstream. Otherwise, there is no point in doing it because the production costs to do anything we will only accept these days something that is of near the quality of what we would see in the cinema.
Yeah.
Okay?
We've all been spoiled with the likes of Game of Thrones. Oh,
so anything less than that is going to have the fan base going, ah.
Yeah.
But
if
in
it's
order
not pretty
to
and shiny, we don't like.
But in order to be able to afford that, they're going to have to create something for the mainstream.
That's going to have the proper terms.
And if they created even a fancy looking version of Ultramarine, the mainstream is going to go,
what?
What?
Yeah.
What was that? That was the most boring thing I've ever seen. And it won't matter about the action sequences and everything else. If there's no agency to it, if there's nothing in there that makes you care about the characters, and I can't think of a single character within 40K other than Loken that I ever actually cared about.
I don't know. I have always enjoyed the inquisitorial stuff just because it's a different look.
Who do you care about?
Honestly, Gregor Eisenhorn himself, because at the beginning of his novel stories, he's a Puritan inquisitor, so he's very hardline. But as you work through it, you slowly see him open up to the galaxy, see the wider universe, see that he might actually have to get himself a little bit dirty in order to defeat the powers of chaos.
Do you reckon they could make you care about him in one sitting?
Yes.
So how many books did it take you to care about him?
First book.
Okay.
And actually two chapters.
All right, two chapters. So there is the potential. Well, anyway, it's where we are. I'm keen to see it, but
30 years too late for Sean Connery to play Jack Draco. But there was an inquisitor, none of this bald Eisenhorn fella.
Nice. He wasn't always bald.
Seriously, if you're into your chaos stuff,
yeah,
that is a no-brainer, an absolute no-brainer.
The thing I was going to say actually is that I think it would be a really cool idea if you basically took what you got from that set and you made that like a little narrative campaign for you and another person. So imagine you split that Kickstarter right down the middle. You've got everything you wanted. One person takes on the role of the dwarves. The other person takes on the role of the Chaos Warriors. And you did a little sort of narrative campaign on a 3x3 table or something. I think that would be really, really fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's just some options there for you to go.
I tell you what, the investment for this one is not overly hefty.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like you're not digging a deep hole if you pledge on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Westphalia's in the background helping out as well, so you know they're good when it comes to Kickstarters.
Happy it days. Was originally going to do, I think, the Dwarves for Westphalia. He's done multiple sculpts for different companies over the years. This is his first
of his own. Yeah.
So,
but just look at that rider.
That's incredible. That
gorgeous.
Is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
You know, I can't think of anyone that wouldn't want to add that as a champion into their Chaos Army.
Yeah.
You know, people who don't like left-handers.
Yes.
I've been toying around with the idea of playing as like a proper Chaos Warband and diving into Warcry and that kind of thing. And so that this is kind of pushing me over the edge towards that a little bit more. But
the Dwarves would make a fantastic Warband for that, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
On the topic of boats and boaties, I have a question for our wonderful community.
Okay. Poll of the week.
No. This is comments of the week. I am trying to find probably 3D printable again because I can resize it down to 15 mil. Okay. So a 3D printable. Is it called a galley? I want the boat that the Crusaders would have used to sail to the Holy Lands.
Okay.
Possibly a galleon.
So I'm not sure what that boat is or what kind of boat that is. And the thing about boats is you can choose the wrong boat. You can't just choose any old historical boat and pass it off because I don't think they sailed around in galleons. I think galleons happened much later.
Yeah, too early.
So if you know of A, what the boat is, and B, Is there anybody, a company out there that has created a cool 3D printable version of it or a 15 mil version of it? I would dearly love to be able to see a 15 mil Crusaders ship of some sort.
It's 13th century if people are wondering what sort of year, because it's end of the 1100s.
Why don't we search
into
this?
Yes. So it's a 12th century or 13th century.
Because are they going to look a lot different to Viking ships?
Yes, they do.
Do they?
Yes, they do. They're not Viking ships.
Because they would have come out of
Venice,
the shipbuilders.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's I swear to God, man, it's a rabbit hole.
Oh yeah, there's so many different types here.
Yeah, it's a rabbit hole. So if you can help me with that, you'd be a great community, and I'll love you forever. Not that I wouldn't love you forever anyway. I'd love you for as long as I have the energy. So there.
But I won't do that.
Right. But I won't do that. Okay. You and these songs, man.
Another one bites the dust.
Okay, right.
Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe and remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.